And welcome to I Protest. This is Donald Jeffries coming to you from just outside the swamp-infested Washington, D.C., as I do every Friday at this time. My special guest today is David Frank. He's a former radio show host for Stand Up America. He's the author of the books 300 Million Minds Changing America Piece by Piece and A Solution, Not a Revolution. He is a Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Award recipient, and he developed the blueprint for Ross Perot's technological town hall meeting system. He's trying to change things and reform things despite battling a terminal cancer diagnosis, which I think particularly makes him a profile in courage. David, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Don. And thanks for the great work you're doing, waking the American people up and people around the world. And I think it's terrific.
I try to do what I can, but you are, this is great. So tell us exactly, okay, you went from, first of all, how did you win the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Award? That sounds really impressive. Tell us about that a little bit.
I used to do a radio program here locally called Stand Up America. And I used to tell the people over the radio that the politicians don't have the answers for you. I said, we have the technology now where you have the answers. And basically some of the activists in Indiana here looked at that and they said, hey, this fulfills the dream of Dr. King. And they called me and asked me to a meeting and they gave it to me and it was just wonderful. I really appreciated it.
Well, that's incredible. So you were a former radio show host. You've written a couple of books. Now, you developed the blueprint for Ross Perot's technological town hall meeting system. And I remember that. I voted for Ross Perot twice. Exciting campaign. But tell us exactly about what you're doing now, because that's the main thing I want to talk about. What are you calling your efforts now and exactly how can people help and all that? What is David Frank doing at this moment?
Well, the plan is called One Voice Now, and it does exactly what it says. It wants to give everyone one voice now. You know, as you turn on the TV, the radio, the news, whatever, all they're talking about is the problems. I mean, America has more problems than I've ever seen in 72 years. And the thing is we've got to find a solution. And we live in the communication age. You know, this didn't exist back in the 1700s when the Constitution was written. And we need to use this technology that's now being used on us, for us. And all we've got to do is put the components together that we all have access to. And all of a sudden, we can fulfill the intent of the Constitution. You know, when it said of the people, by the people, and for the people, we can now fulfill that dream that the founders had and allow the people to start representing themselves. I think we're all finding that the politicians, they're misrepresenting us and they're being paid to do so. And what we have to do now is not rely on them any longer, but come up with our own plan, just like the founders did. And in the Declaration of Independence, they told us that it's not only our right, but our duty to change the system just as they had. And they did the best that they could do back in the 1700s. But there wasn't one word of communication technology in the Constitution. And I think that's really why we're failing today as a country, because the people don't have a voice. So what we've been promoting is, you know, right now the TV is being used on us. We're getting a lot of this fake news, and we've got to use this technology for us. And the thing that One Voice Now is doing is promoting an idea. It picks up where Ross Perot left off when he said technological town hall meeting system, and he moved America, because when America heard that on Larry King Live back about 30 years ago, they thought, hey, this guy knows technology, and he wants us to resolve the issues. He wants us to have a vote on these issues. But unfortunately, Ross Perot didn't know how to build the system. He thought you build it from the top down. That's why he ran for president. A system like this has to be built from the ground up, community by community. And that's what the One Voice Now plan does. It's the blueprint for each community around America and around the world, actually, that allows we the people to raise the issues, we the people to debate the issues, and we the people to vote on the issues. I look at it as 21st century technological direct democracy. And it's here. We can do it overnight. We need a movement, and that's what we're trying to do. We're reaching out to people in the front of the line to look at One Voice Now. You know, you got the Black Lives movement going, and who knows what that's all about. We've got to pick up where Martin Luther King left off and demand a voice for everyone. That's what One Voice Now does. And very simply, this is the way it works. It can be done overnight almost. Most people don't know that the American people own a TV station. It started back in 1969, and when people heard about it across America, they thought, hey, this is great. This TV station is actually going to give us a voice. And they called it public broadcasting. Well, the federal politicians, the state politicians, and the local politicians, no matter what they say at election time, they really don't want you to have a voice. And what they did was they started funding public broadcasting. And that's why instead of using it to actually broadcast the public, we're watching Antique Roadshow and cartoons and 60s music, just stupid stuff. And what we've got to do is, you know, like I said earlier, we've got to stand up like Martin Luther King did, demand a voice. This is the way to do it. What we want to do is we want to change the format of all of the local public broadcasting stations across America to our new local issues TV, radio, and internet channel. And this will be used to allow we the people, when someone in your community has an idea to make education better, the environment, taxation, healthcare, whatever it is, they'll be able to present their idea directly to the community over the TV. We'll simulcast it over the radio and live stream it over the internet. And after people have an opportunity to see these ideas, these solutions, we'll debate these ideas because we want people to be educated before they would vote on these different ideas. And they can vote very simply by calling a local number. Your call will go into a community database that will have your ID number and PIN number, ask you what issue number you'd like to vote on, press 1 for yes, 2 for no, count your vote, block you out if you try and vote again, and we can now have decisions of by and for the people.
Well, it certainly sounds great, but I mean, you talk about public broadcasting, but I mean, at what point did they turn it into the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? It's just the very name. Doesn't that, you know, refute what it's supposed to represent?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was meant to broadcast the public. But like everything in America now, it's all bought off. Everything is bought off, you know. And that's why nothing works. That's the system that we have now. We have a system that allows our decision makers to take bribes from lobbyists representing special interests. And you only bribe a judge or a juror or a politician to make the wrong decisions. Consequently, you know, our healthcare system doesn't work in America, our education system, our environment's in trouble. Infrastructure is falling apart. And I don't think it's a secret that it's really turned into basically an organized crime system. And people think that the way to fix this is from the top down.
Right.
But you have to remember, top down systems always benefit the people at the top. In America, closest estimate is that 5% of the population owns 95% of the wealth. That's leaving 95% of us fighting over the 5% or the 20% that's left. And it's just not fair. I mean, we have to give the American people an alternative to violence in resolving their issues, and that's what One Voice Now does.
Well, it's certainly, I agree with you about the bottom up, and I've been talking about what you see with the parents and the school boards and everything. I think we have been looking at it the wrong way. You're never going to change Congress or anything the way it is now, because you mentioned there's so much fraud, so much corruption, but we have a chance at the bottom level. But so I like the idea of getting a hold, because the people are starved for real knowledge and they're just absorbing propaganda constantly from every news outlet. But if you had just one outlet like that, that was the People's Network, it would be wonderful. But how do you wrest control of that? Because it's been taken over, called the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Powerful forces are involved, not to mention the government wouldn't. I mean, every Democrat and probably most Republicans are going to fight you tooth and nail to get this into some kind of populist thing. How would you go about doing that?
I'd say that's the two-edged sword. Any politician that ever ran for office has always said, hey, when I get into office, I'm going to listen to the people. Well, you know as well as I know that one person in Congress, it's impossible to listen to 750,000 people. And anybody that speaks out against this is really, really going to look bad. You know, we're marching all over the country over the world promoting this thing called democracy. And guess what? We're not. And, you know, we can't tell other countries to be democracies if we're not one. And a lot of people, when they hear the word democracy, they go, "Ooh, the founders didn't like that. You know, that's mob rule." Well, in the 21st century, the mob is organized crime. That's what the mob was called. It's organized crime. And that's what we have in Washington. And that's what we have in state capitals. And that's what we have in sitting on the city councils and the mayors. And, you know, we've got to take it back from the ground up. If you want to pull the power at the top of the ladder, you never pull the ladder from the top. You always pull it from the bottom. And now everyone across the country has access to a voting device. It's your phone. You know, we're voting on American Idol, and we're voting on Dancing with the Stars and CNN and the next country Western song to be played. Why don't we just vote on education issues and environment issues and healthcare issues? And when we find things that work in our community, we'll share that idea with the rest of the communities. And when they find things that work, they'll share it with us, and we'll actually start rebuilding America from the ground up. But anybody that speaks out against this, you know, we have one of two choices. We can keep going Democrat to Republican or Republican to Democrat. I'm 72, and I've been watching this, and things have only gotten worse, and that's not the answer. The alternative is we the people, and that's what we need to do. We need to take this technology that's being used on us and use it for us, and it's very, very simple. You know, watch issues over the TV, internet and radio, and vote by phone. If somebody's got a better plan, let's do it. You know, this plan isn't about Dave Frank. Dave Frank doesn't have the answers. Like you had mentioned earlier, Dave Frank's not going to be around here too long. He's got some health issues, but technology's keeping me alive right now, which is really cool, because, you know, like 40 years ago, if somebody had what I have, they were just gone. And today I'm still here. And, you know, we have the technology to do all these things. And unfortunately, we also have the technology to blow up humanity. And if we don't change, that's what's going to happen. But what we have to do is take control of our lives. And you do that community by community. How many times have you seen, you know, a million people run to Washington, D.C. and they stand there? You know, what did you accomplish? You accomplished nothing. It was nice that you went. You know, we know you love America, but you didn't accomplish anything. If you want to accomplish something, you fix your piece of America. And if everybody fixes their piece of America, America will get fixed. But, you know, Joe Biden's not going to come out on the TV tomorrow and say, hey, I've decided I'm going to clean up your air in your community or your water. It's not going to happen. The people in your own community, the people in your own community have to clean up your air and your water, and it'll get fixed.
Well, basically, direct democracy there has a lot of attractive features to it. Ross Perot talked about it. We already have some of that in our system and with the referendums, what has happened in the past, you had, I think, Proposition 13 or a couple of the propositions that were really, you know, obviously going against the establishment that passed in California and also years ago, the courts just overturned them. And so don't we have such tier, like couldn't that possibly happen here? If direct democracy was able to change something at the local level, would we have to worry about our really totally corrupt court system overturning things?
Well, you know, keep in mind, who's financing this corrupt system? We are.
Right.
You know, we're giving it the nourishment that it needs to enslave us. And the great thing about One Voice Now is, hey, if you don't think income taxes are constitutional, which I don't, or if you don't think property taxes are constitutional, which I don't, and so many other taxes, when it comes to it's the old saying, what if everybody just stopped paying taxes together?
Right.
They can't throw us all in jail or in prison.
Right.
And that's absolutely right. So what we do is, in our community, if we've got an idea for a better tax system, we raise the issue, we debate it, we vote on it, we implement it, and all of a sudden we start keeping our tax money in our community to take care of the things we, the people, care about. We can't keep giving these idiots money in Washington. America is bankrupt. It's bankrupt. It's over. It's done. It's Venezuela. It just hasn't laid down and died yet. A lot of people hear these numbers, you know, like, oh, we're $28 trillion in debt. You know how much 28 trillion is? It's 28 million million. It's a number that doesn't exist, and it basically happened just over the last 50 years from these financial idiots that are sucking the life out of our communities. And so instead of using violence, you know, like there is happening in Portland and other places around the country and the world, what we do is we're going to stand up and demand a voice and demand that we use communication technology to give everyone a voice in our communities. And what we're going to do is we're going to interconnect the brain cells in your community so that instead of seven idiots on a school board, you might have 7,000 people coming up with ideas in your community to make your education system better than ever before, or healthcare, or environment, or whatever it is. It's bringing that collective consciousness together. But we cannot solve 21st century issues with the 1700 system. It's never, ever, ever going to work. We are, you know, we're going down, and we've got a chance to change things just like the founders did. And we have to follow in their footsteps. They told us that absolute power was going to corrupt absolutely, and it has. And now it's up to us to do something. You know, the people in Washington aren't going to come up with an idea to take the power away from them and give it to us. It's up to us, just like the founders did. So, but before you do anything like that, and before you build a new system, you know, a lot of people, I ask the people, you know, they say, well, we've got to defend the Constitution. And I say to them, well, what exactly is the Constitution? And I said, tell me in two words or less. And they look at me and they, blah, blah. You know what the Constitution is, very simply, Don?
It's a blueprint.
It's a blueprint. It's a blueprint for hopefully having issues by the people, having the direction of America decided by the people. But it doesn't have one drop of technology in it. You know, you turn on that TV and, man, you got technology flying at you. They're telling you what to buy, what to smoke.
Well, that's why when radio was invented and television, they created the FCC to censor it. There's never been free speech on radio and television.
That's right. And the FCC has been bought up totally, too. You know, I mean, I don't know how old you are. I'm 72. I mean, you couldn't say damn on TV.
Right,
exactly. Or the radio, or you and I remember. I'm so old that I remember them arresting DJs because they were taking a little like a lunch. Somebody gave them a lunch to play a song on the radio, you know. And here you got these lobbyists representing these corporations that have basically taken over America. You know, they get anything they want because they make their laws, and then they take those bills to the political prostitutes and they turn them into laws. And, you know, we're sitting here financing this whole ball of wax and we have no voice. And that's why we need One Voice Now. And I'm doing everything I can to get this idea out there. Unfortunately, I'm the wrong guy to really, you know, move it forward. We're looking for maybe a celebrity or a sports person or just somebody that can get the attention of the American people. Maybe a very wealthy person that sees the writing on the wall and wants to help get a very simple idea out there.
Well,
so that people have hope.
Well, it sounds, I mean, Ross Perot talked about, you know, we had such high hopes for the Reform Party, but the Reform Party, it just flamed out very quickly. And for nobody mm-hmm. even talks about Jesse Ventura was elected. I think he's the only candidate that was ever elected under the Reform Party banner. So the problem is populism. I'm a big populist and this is power to the people. And that's me. That's, you know, right on. But it's the populism. What you're suggesting, and that is populism, you know, the people, let the people have mm-hmm. the power. We need to take back control from our corrupt masters. That's such a hard, you know, and that's why I'm wondering how many members does your group have, and how have you made any inroads at all? Like, especially you said in your community, have you had success at that level?
You know, I spent 3 days in jail back in 1977 and the paper, the newspaper, you know, it's not just national media that's corrupt. It's local, too. And they hate the idea of the people having a voice because where does the media get financed? Well, our party here locally is the Democrats. It could be Republicans. It doesn't really matter. But at election time, you know how much money flows to the local media, you know, for the elections, campaign finance money? A lot. So when somebody like Dave Frank stands up, and it's so true, you just can't preach in your own land. But when he stands up, they just shut him down because they don't want the people to have a voice. You know, that's the bottom line. But what they want and what they're going to get are going to be two different things. Because, in fact, I heard on the radio today a poll. I don't put a lot of I don't put much credence in polls because I've never even been polled, so I don't know who they're polling. But they say that 58% of the people think that the media is just bad, you know, and it is because they're in bed with a political machine that finances them. That's why they love all these candidates running, because they're all going out and getting campaign finance money. Well, where do you think all that campaign finance money ends up? Ends up with the media. So, you know, they don't want to report on anything that, hey, this guy's got an idea where, you know, we could truly have our representatives represent us. And maybe we don't even need those representatives, you know, and we don't. And we really don't anymore. We need to start representing ourselves and building the kind of community and world that we want. But, there's a lot of, but obviously you supported Perot. In 30 years, I have never found one person that didn't vote for Ross Perot.
Yeah.
Not one. Not one. I'm telling
you, not
one.
Were they counting the votes then, you know?
Election fraud has existed here, you know, and when they think about election fraud, they think of somehow they focus on Washington. No, the election fraud is in every community. It's in every community that makes up the, you know, this the whole country. And so it's but see, this is a better way to have the direction of America decided just the way the founders wanted it to be done. You know, if you had told somebody about, hey, we've got a TV, a touchtone phone, a computer now, those words weren't even known back then. But today, everybody has access to a voting device. And I mean, I'm on my phone right now. I don't know what you're on, maybe a computer or your phone, but
I'm on a laptop.
Yeah. We can do this. Yeah, we can do this. The only thing we're missing is a plan. And that's what One Voice Now is. It's a plan. And I'm, you know, maybe with all your listeners, and I hope they like this, and I hope they go to our website. It's onevoicenow.org.
Okay, so we got a break for commercial. You'll have plenty of chance to give out those links again. We'll be right back after these words more Dave Frank. But we all cheered wildly. A photograph was taken as you waved a piece of paper in the air. Yeah, welcome back to Iron Protest. We're talking with Dave Frank, whose organization One Voice Now is trying to bring the power back to the people. Very populist-oriented movement. Thus, it attracted my attention because, I, as you all know, Huey Long is my hero, and I'm as populist as they come. So One Voice Now. First of all, how big is the organization? How many members do you have? Do you have chapters around the country? Tell us like how it's progressed so far.
You know, Don, it's just a loose-knit idea. It's not incorporated. We're just trying to get it out. That's all. All we have is the blueprint that every community needs. We didn't spend a lot of time, building this big organization. I believe, and I saw it happen on Larry King Live when Ross Perot was on there, and I'm sure you saw that. If you can give the American people an idea, and if the right person gets it to them, they'll move it. And the problem is, I'm just a regular guy. We need somebody to jump on this thing and help take it to the next level. We've got the blueprint right there on the website. It's very simple. And so any of your listeners, if you know of anybody that can help, I hope you like this idea. Hey, it's so simple. And it did win the Dr. Martin Luther King Award in Indiana, because it fulfills the dream of Dr. King. You know, if you look at all of these protests, people are marching all around, you know, they're marching in the 21st century. It's just so ridiculous. And they're saying, we want a voice. We want a voice. Well, here's your voice. Here's your voice. You don't even have to leave your home. Or if you want to leave your home, you can. I mean, it's that simple. And, you know, we've got it set up where, like I said, you can watch issues, ideas in your community over the TV, simulcast it over the radio, live stream it over the internet. Everybody has an opportunity to see it. And if you like the idea and you want to vote on it, just call a local number. It'll go into your call will go into a database that will have your ID number and PIN number. And it'll ask you to vote, press one for yes, two for no, count the vote, block you out from voting more than once. And it's up by and for the people. I mean, anybody in a leadership position that doesn't like this, see, what they do is they ignore it. But that's why we need to get the people. We need to get the groups of people to stand up and just say, hey, we want One Voice Now. Well, what's One Voice Now? Go to onevoicenow.org. It'll give every person an equal voice in America. Everybody wants equality. This gives that equality. And it's very simple. Let me walk you through an issue so that you can see how easy this really is. Once we changed the format of our local public broadcasting stations to all local issues, and then we'll get people to get registered in the community database, we don't want to hear silly issues. What we need is a filtering system. And what the computer will do, the database, it'll pick 10 people at random every week. And it'll give people who have never had the opportunity before to sort of be a filtering system, a representative, if you will, in your community. We have 10 people now, and what we do is anybody that has an idea to make the community better, I personally think that we should have a law that says no driving and drinking. It doesn't mean you can't drink, just don't drive and drink. Every day you turn on the TV, radio, and you hear about these people that are getting killed by drunk drivers. So I'd present my idea to these 10 people. If the majority of these 10 people think that this is an idea that should be considered by the community, I go to the next step. The next step is videotaping me and my issue and presenting it over our local issues, TV, radio, and internet channel for a period of 10 days. Excuse me. There will be two phone numbers that will be given. One number people can call and be part of a lobbying group for the issue. One number they can call and be part of a lobbying group against the issue. And we'll, I'm sorry, just lost my train of thought. What will happen is information will be given to them as to where and when we debate this issue. And we'll videotape the debate and present that over our local issues, TV, radio, and internet channel for a period of 10 more days. And it will be given an issue number. And anybody that wants to vote on it just calls the local number, go into the database, one for yes, two for no, count it, block you out from voting more than once. Every time the debate is replayed over a period of 10 days, there'll be an updated tally of the yeses and the noes. And at the end of 10 days, not only will your community be educated on the issue, but the outcome will come from them and they will implement it in their communities. And we'll test market it. And like I said, when we find things that work in our community, we'll share it with all the other communities. And when they find things that work, they'll share it with us. And we start rebuilding from the ground up. You know, somebody told me, you know, talking about America being a top-down system, you know, the only thing that you build from the top down?
Yeah.
A hole. a hole.
Yeah.
And we are in America is in a hole. And, you know, like I said, 28, 30 trillion, whatever. I mean, it's a hole. They bankrupted us and enslaved us. And what we've got to do is stand up and say, hey, we're not doing this anymore. We're not going to finance you. We're going to keep our money in our communities and take care of the things we care about. Shortest distance between two points is a straight line. Why are we sending our tax money to state capitals so they can supposedly send it back? Why are we sending it to, Washington, D.C. so they can launder it to their corporate cronies? Instead, you keep your money right in your community. And you take care of the things you want taken care of, and you say no to the things you don't believe in. You know, this critical race theory right now, if One Voice Now was up and running, you bring it to the community, you debate it, you vote on it and say, hey, you know, this ain't going to work for our kids. And you change it, and you empower the teachers, and you empower the parents to build the kind of education system they want. And these are the things we can do very simply, very simply.
Well, I like it really is an extension of the a referendum idea that if you the referendums were devised to give some of that direct democracy, because when you have, and I believe we're a constitutional republic. And I don't like the pure democracy simply because it can turn into mob rule, but you need these injections of direct democracy because the system has become so rigged, and it's so hard to get to circumvent it and to get things changed. Something like a referendum, that's what you're talking about. Basically, is that if you don't like critical race theory or something, you put that up, and instead of putting it on a ballot, this makes it much easier. You put it on the local public television. You have a chance to debate it or whatever, and people vote on it. So certainly that's certainly a way to get – now, your local school boards won't be too happy, but You know, that seems to be the only way, because there so many parents are protesting that in particular. And so far, I don't know, have any school board members been recalled? I know they're trying to, but I'm hoping they make some headway there, because that's kind of the bottom. They're working the bottom of the way up.
Yeah, you know, I'm just sort of laughing while you're talking. You know, you got these seven people that don't communicate with the community. They're supposed to be representatives of the community. And when you we have 267,000 people where I live. Out of, you know, if you're only using seven brain cells out of 267,000 brain cells, it's brain dead.
Yeah.
And it is. And same with the city council. And yeah, I mean, it's just, you got to have a plan. You got to have a blueprint. One Voice Now is a blueprint. You know, people want to get organized in your communities, but unless you can communicate, you can't get organized. You know, if you're fighting a battle and you want to win, the first thing you do is you knock out your, you know, your opponent's communication system. That's what we do, you know, when we go to war. But conversely, if you want to build a community, which is what we'd really like to start doing, is our communities, you build a communication system, and that's what this is. And this can be done overnight. This can be done overnight. All we, the people, have to do is want it. You know, just like, you know, you could see the people moving when Ross Perot said technological town hall meeting system. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. And you said you were involved in it, right? Weren't you involved in that movement for Perot, or no?
Well, no, I've voted for him and supported. That was before the internet. I'm sure I would have been doing what I do now and talking about it. But you said you developed developed the town hall concept by Perot. I mean, did you have any involvement with Perot? Tell us about that.
You know, we kept calling him, because we kept talking to his sister, mm-hmm. and we said, hey, you know, we've got this plan we want to talk to him about. And she said, well, he's got a lot of people that's trying to talk to him. And that's the problem. That really is the problem.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as, you know, you got 300 million people realizing that, you know, LeBron James has a platform, or Ross Perot, or any of these people, they got thousands of people coming at them all day. So when Dave Frank says, you know, I'd like to talk to him about this plan to get, oh, okay, well, we've got that handled. We'll take care of that. You know, he had no plan. But the technology really didn't exist. It was before, you know, everybody and their brother had one of these phones in their hands, and now we've got them. But, you know, it wasn't supposed to happen back then. It's supposed to happen now. And, you know, they say no pain, no gain. I don't know anybody that's not in pain, you know, for, you know, either themselves or a family member or their friends. I mean, there's so much dysfunction going on in our society right now. And it's because of our environment. The environment that we're in doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely. Do you think in the, because the country is so divided, and again, I think populism is the answer. And I think both Bernie Sanders' campaign and Trump's 2016 campaign showed that. They both tapped into the different aspects of populism. But do you think that we could get, like, if you had something like this, if you could get One Voice Now up and running on a local public television station, you took it away from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting, and you voted, do you think that our side would win? Do you think there's more populist sentiment out there than basically the asleep people that are running around with their masks on?
People are so frustrated with the existing system, and they're so afraid that China really is taking over America, and it is. For what reason do they own 2,000 of our companies? I mean, this makes no sense at all. They own property. They own land. You know, this is our arch enemy. And I don't want to get into politics, but it just doesn't work. Poly means many, ticks are bloodsuckers. God's trying to tell us something. You know, the only thing that they care about in Washington or state capitals or downtown, the only thing they care about is our money. You know, they built a multi-level marketing pyramid scam. And the founders knew this was going to happen. They knew it. That's, you know, that once again, that's where absolute power corrupts absolutely right. comes from. And they said that we should change. It's our duty to change the system. But Dave Frank can't do it alone. I can't do it alone. And, you know, I'm not a rock star. I'm not a billionaire. I'm just a regular guy. And, you know, I look at Moses. Hey, Moses needed Aaron. You know, it wasn't Moses that freed the slaves. It was really Aaron that brought everybody together and said, hey, you know, if we all stand up together, we can walk out of this thing. And that's what they did. And that's what we need. I mean, like I said, One Voice Now isn't about Dave Frank. And Dave Frank can fall over at any time. But the blueprint is there that I put together for every community. And it's so simple. But we need people. We need people to stand up. What they've got and what they're counting on is, you know, you got this group of people who care about the environment. You got this group of people who care about, you know, education or whatever it is. They've got all these, everybody's going off in different directions. And what we've got to do is we've got to focus on just one thing. And that one thing is One Voice Now. Before Henry Ford could build the automobile, he had to build the tools to build the automobile. And that's what we have to do. This is the communication tool that you need in your community to interconnect all of those brain cells and to bring them together, just like they did with the Manhattan Project. You know, they built a bomb. They brought the best and the brightest together, and they built a bomb. What we have to do is we need to bring the best and the brightest in our communities together and build good education, build clean water, clean air, you know, and we have to set a precedent for these young kids that are just going crazy. And we have to set a precedent for resolving issues through communication. Not through violence. We've lost control over our airwaves. You mentioned the FCC. You know, all you see is sex and violence on TV. It's programming these people to be over sex and over violent. And we should have a voice in what our kids are seeing over our airwaves. And we've lost control over that. But we can regain control by everybody having a voice. And when, you know, I want to go back to something you said about mob rule. You know, we don't want decisions made by the mob. Well, keep in mind that on all of these different issues, the majority is always going to change because there aren't two people that feel the same way about all the issues. I've never found one person that feels exactly the way I do on the issues that I care about. And it'll always change. And it's right there for the taking.
Well, I don't know if the majority really has ever ruled on anything. I mean, I look at issues like, you know, the banker bailout of 2008. I think polls showed like 96% of the public was against that. So that was like the mm-hmm. antithesis of democracy. And most of the time our leaders are doing things that the majority clearly don't want, whether it's immigration, I mean, anything. I mean, I think even polls show that. But so I think obviously you're onto something here, but have you had any, have you been able to contact any local officials, mayors, or people that might be interested? I was wondering if you have anybody, you said like celebrities, do you have anybody even at the local level, whatever, that is interested in this?
Every politician that I've sat down with thinks it's a great idea, but they will not use it because they're controlled by the political machine.
Right.
You know, the political machine financed them to get into office. And then after they get in, they've got, you know, like on the city council here, they make a couple thousand a month to do basically nothing but to do what they're told. And this happens in every community. And then the mayor, you probably know our mayor, we call him Pothole Pete. Pete Buttigieg.
Yes.
You remember him?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah. He ran on him being a Rhodes Scholar. Okay.
And but he couldn't fix any roads, which was sort of interesting. And he ran on transparency and accountability. Okay, here's this big genius, and he's in Washington right now. Mm-hmm. And he ran, and so when he got into office, I wrote him a letter first, and I said, you know, I've been an activist for 30 years and won the King Award. And we've got the plan, the technological plan for transparency and accountability in our community. Don, for 8 years, he refused to talk to me.
Wow.
Refused to talk to me. And that's the way, you know, this is what changes faster than winning an election. You know, your best friend can win an election, and all of a sudden that person changes. That power does to people.
Sure.
But this mayor, I mean, he's a very smart guy. The system is very corrupt, and a very smart guy knows how to take advantage of a corrupt system. Just to give you a little idea, the guy spends $650,000 on a boom box for our community.
It's quite a boom
box. We're hundreds of millions of dollars broke, and he spent $650,000. You think anybody made anything under the table on that? You think?
Yeah, I
and
think
then,
so.
And then as he's leaving, $38 million for a perfectly good library to be redone for whatever reason. Beautiful library, nothing wrong with it. $38 million on when he's on his way out of being the mayor, and the only people that were going to it were the homeless to get warm. Every library and somebody millions and millions because they donated to his campaign, and that's just one or a couple of things that. It's just corrupt. The whole thing is corrupt.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's why I think it's essential that we do start. The corruption is so systemic, and it's everywhere at all levels. I think we do have the best chance of getting at it from the bottom, because obviously the top, there's just nobody. The bottom, you know, maybe we can make inroads with these school boards and mayors and people at that level. But and then maybe, it starts going upwards. We get some governors, but you're right. At the top, it's impossible getting through to people and trying to turn Congress into an honest majority or something. Hello? Are you there, Dave? Dave? Hello, I noticed you were going in and out before. Dave, are you still there? Well, it wouldn't be an episode of I Protest without technical glitches. Dave, are you there? I'm not sure what happened. 2-3 in the call. What the heck happened there? Let me try bringing him back in. Let's try. I'm not sure what happened. Let's try here. Actually, let me call and dial again. Sorry about that. Okay. Let's add. Sorry, folks. Again, this is the beauty of the system here. Why I have another show now, I might add. Okay, it's calling. I'm not sure what's there. Dave, can you hear me? It says he's not on the call now. Hi, Dave.
I guess they cut me off. I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened. I realize, but yeah. So we only have like 2 minutes and something less. I want to give you opportunity to again. You got the floor. Talk about what you want. Give those links again and tell people how they can help.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Don. Please go to onevoicenow.org. onevoicenow.org. My contact information is there. I'd love to work with anybody that's interested in getting this going in their community. And we can do this. I'm telling you, it's very simple. It's totally nonviolent. We need to set a precedent in our communities for resolving our issues through communication and not violence. Very simply, let the people watch issues over the TV, internet, and radio. Vote by phone. It's that simple. This isn't something that you're going to hear from Washington or state capitals or downtown. Like I said, all they care about is your money. That's why crime is so bad right now. There is no money left in our communities. It's all been sucked out by federal, state, and local people. And poverty creates crime. And it's every day it's going to get worse. One Voice Now is the communication tool that we need to say, nope, you're not doing this anymore. We're going to work together as a community, and we're all going to fix our own communities together and from the ground up. So that's it. OneVoiceNow.org. Please go there. Please be in touch. If you know of anybody in the front of the line that is concerned about our future and the future, I mean, our kids deserve better than this. They really do. And their kids deserve better than this. And it's our responsibility. So please check it out. I hope you like it. And let's fix America.
Absolutely. Well, I couldn't have said it better, Dave. And I want to tell people that considering what you're going through, it's all the more remarkable that you're able to concentrate on something like this. And I hope you get to see some change starting, and I hope we all do. And because the power to the people is something that resonates, and this is our country. And you're right.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead. Quick, because we're running out here.
I just wanted to say this. A very intelligent guy called me to his bedside as he was dying, and he said, always remember Davey Boy Box, Papa Lie Box Day. The voice of the people is the voice of God, man. That's my religion. We can all do it. All we got to do is work together.
Well, thanks. That's great.
My name is Ella.
Back to your protest. Donald Jeffries here with you, and that's the ranting portion of the show. Phone lines are open. Whether they're going to work or not is anyone's guess. I hear every week from somebody that tried to call in. They couldn't do it, so give it a try. Hopefully it works, because you know I love hearing from you. 1-833-TFR-LIVE or 213-233-3998. And that UK line, which there's even less chance it's going to work, but you know, hope for miracles. Love to hear from you. 442-0339-3-2871. But again, the easiest way is 1-833-TFR-LIVE, and we love to get your calls. So I hope some of you out there listen to the Donald Jeffries Show. That's my new show, and I'm probably going to be having at least one other new show coming relatively soon as well. So I don't know. I don't know how much longer it will be on TFR for right now. I'm here. I've got a couple guests lined up in the future. So we'll be doing this for a while. But I hope you guys will follow me wherever I go. And the people that listen to me regularly, please. The Donald Jeffries Show has – we had like 4 or 5 callers the other night with John Barber. So we have open lines, and we also have a nice chat room there. I didn't see – maybe Chris – I think Chris got in there. But I didn't see anybody else in there that I knew. It wasn't, you know, very active. So please, I love having the chat room to work off of. So follow me over there. It's ocelli.com, O-C-H-E-L-L-I, ocelli.com. And it's the Donald Jeffries Show, Wednesdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern time. So I hope you guys will come over there. You keep thinking things can't get any worse, but it's just amazing the world that we're living in. You know, now Joe Biden is talking about coming door to door and the vaccines, and this vaccine thing is really I don't know how I'm sure most of you are probably in that situation too, but I have a very big family and a very big extended family. I mean, you know, just one side of my family. When my kids were little, they used to love, we'd go to this yearly get together. And a lot of them have money in that side of the family, but it was like a 250 acres, and they'd have all these animals and everything, and they have a pig roast. You know, there's a lot of, you know, rednecks with a lot of money that were there, but it was a good time. And, but there were, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people there every year. And I would always tell my kids, and their eyes would get real wide. I said, every one of them's related to you. And they just go, I mean, so that's how many relatives that I have. I have a lot of them. And that's just one side of my family. But I don't know how many of them haven't got the vaccine, but I do know the ones I know, it's myself and my kids, and that's it, and my brother. All the rest, as far as I know, and so many of them are really on board with it. They're, and so we are already feeling there's a wedding coming up on my wife's side. My wife's family is just as bad as far as buying it. So basically myself and my kids aren't going to be going to my niece's wedding because, you know, they don't come if you're not vaccinated. I think we're going to see more and more of this. Now we're having a party that I have not seen a lot of members of my family for over a year because of this vaccine nonsense. I mean, this pandemic nonsense. They're going to have some kind of party outside. I don't know. Hopefully they'll let us use the bathroom if we have to. It'd be 95 degrees maybe, but it'd be interesting to gauge how that is because, again, people, they know obviously how I feel about things now that I have this little platform, the platforms I have. And I think they're more resentful than ever of it. And I don't know. I just hope it doesn't cause permanent fractures in my family or in other families, but I think it's going to. And Chris says, I lost my girl with this vaccine shit. I hate it. The powers that be won again. Yeah, I mean, it's, and I'm sorry that happened to you too. And I'm sure you're not the only one. And it's, you know, really, it's tragic. Like I said, something like this is tragic when you can't go to a wedding. You can't, you know, you can't, but, you know, we saw this for over a year. Again, people allow this to happen that, you know, for over a year, we saw this where old people and every institution in our society bought into this. They bought into the tyranny where, you know, you had how many old people died in nursing homes? And I hope most of you read my blog, but I wrote something this week that's a little different for me. On my DonaldJeffries.wordpress.com, keeping it unreal. I call the American loneliness phenomenon. It's getting lots of play. We discussed it on Jeff Rentz this Monday, and I did an interview a couple nights ago on a pretty big show where the guy just read it and wanted an interview about it. So people relate to it because America is becoming, and I quoted the stats in there, America, people don't realize how different America is becoming from the rest of the world. Well, we're carrying this rugged individualism shit to the, you know, to the nth degree here, where people, old people especially, it's tragic how many old people live alone. And I give you just for contrast, two countries that I saw, India and Iraq. You know, the country we devastated there for decades, you know, killed millions with their baby formula embargo, things like that. Those two countries, about three quarters of the elderly people in those countries live Waltons, like remember the show The Waltons, Walton style. They live with extended family members, which is how America used to do it because the rest of the world did it for a long time. You took in your old people. You didn't have ridiculous, cold and hideous and expensive nursing homes where you sent them to get subpar care and often die of neglect and loneliness and broken hearts, which is what happened in the last year. But so again, two thirds of the people in those kind of the old people in the country live that rational, humane way. In America, what percentage of America's elderly do you think live with other family members? 6%. That's a shocking contrast. And it tells, again, how America is. It illustrates what was already there, this tendency. And I know so many people. And I had, you know, I've had to do wellness checks on a couple older friends. A couple of them had died in the last several years that were by themselves. If you're living by yourself, you don't even necessarily need to be sick. If you dropped out of a heart attack or stroke, well, yeah, you're not going to be able, nobody's going to be there to call an ambulance for you. But even if you just fall, I mean, old people can fall all the time and hit your head. Well, if you live with somebody, you might be able to be saved. But if you're by yourself and you're isolated, then you have nobody's going to call. And how many people die because of that, just because they're by themselves? And it plays into what I call the great American dysfunction. And the dysfunction was already there in America. But now with the pandemic, what I'm talking about with what's going on in our family and everything, that dysfunction is going to new levels because, you know, now you have the split, the vaccine split. I mean, you know, I'm feeling like they must have felt, you know, back in Jim Crow's days. I mean, is this what it's going to be? The unvaccinated? Or are we going to be a scarlet letter? We're going to have to be marked? Are we going to have separate facilities, separate but equal? You bring it back in apartheid. I mean, this may happen. It's serious because they are. And I see the way my family, extended family members, acting, and they're completely irrational, just like everybody. That is, you know, going through this situation. The people that have bought into this notion, they have lost whatever reason they had left. You know, when you're buying into science that tells you you have to put a mask on to walk in a restaurant, but you can take it off as soon as you get to the table because you're cool, the virus can't get you there. They bought that for over a year. Now it's wonderful being able to walk around because, I took my brother to the doctor's office the other day, and of course we had to wear a mask there, and it was really stupid because nobody's wearing anywhere else, but, you know, they're going to make you do it, I guess, as long as they can. And of course, even in the grocery stores and places, I don't know how it is in your areas of the country, but more and more people are not wearing their masks, but we're still outnumbered, even though clearly whatever imaginary danger was there is long past. You still see, especially the old people, the terrified looks, the dirty looks they give you if you don't have your mask on. They're wearing those masks and they're clinging to this nonsense. And so the dysfunction that was already there is growing because of that single issue alone. You know, it's a civil war type issue. You know, people are ready to just cut off family members because of that. Sea Stars yet says British Airlines lost 5 pilots to vaccines within a couple of weeks. They mandated the vaccine. The frontline doctors have performed for your employer to sign. Jacob B says it's the employees wearing them now, especially at the, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they are. And they still are. It really is amazing. Says Bam 420 says the artist formerly known as Bam. I had an old idiot scream at me to put your mask on. Yeah, that's, you know, it's, and you're going to see more of that because, and I remember hearing, seeing it on social media where people said, you know, I don't care if you don't have to wear a mask on. Why should we take them off? They like this. They love this ridiculous, I guess, you know, bank robber look. I don't know what, I mean, it's horrible. You can't even see what people really look like if they're covering up their face. I mean, you know, remember Batman and all the superheroes, and they were able to hide their secret identities with a mask. So, you know, is that what we want? I mean, it's just ridiculous. And what I talked about in the loneliness phenomenon, America, you know, we're number one in that. We're number one in every bad category possible. We're not number one in any good category. We become the world's wealthiest banana republic. I've said it many, many times. We should not look down our nose at any third world country. In fact, third world countries should be looking down their nose at us at this point because we don't do anything right. We've just turned into a horrible society. So whether, you know, God, hope Dave Frank with his One Voice Now or movements like that, we need something because we are – We are a complete joke of a society. And if I did not have my family, I would have been out of America so fast. And it's the only reason I'm staying here. And Jesse Grayson, killers like Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, and Leatherface wearing the mask. Sure. I mean, it's never been other than, you know, the superheroes wearing the mask, you know, maintain their secret identity. But other than that, it's always a symbol of like the bad guys. Why are you wearing a mask? You know, the robbers, you know, they put on the mask, whether it's riding the stagecoach or the banks. And it's really, it's transformed American society again for the worse. We already had so many issues, and now you have this thrown into the bunch. And what I talked about in that article was, again, the isolation and how many people, what it means for people. And I talked about the males, especially the lonely male phenomenon. It's just unbelievable how many males I know. But Jacob says, I've seriously been looking at properties abroad. Well, you know, if you're not married, you don't have kids, You should. There's no reason for anybody other than family ties and loyalty to stay here. C-Stars Yet says, nice show. I'll be tuning here a lot more often. It's time to get involved in Article 5 and convention states. Well, thank you. It's great to see you here. I didn't recognize your name. Wonderful. Thanks for coming in. And I hope you will come back. And check out my other show, The Donald Jeffrey Show, on Ocelli.com, which is every Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. But when you have a society, what does it say about us that there's so many old people that live alone because their children, their grandchildren would do. And again, this is alone in the rest of the world. Now, I have the view I have because I'm a multi, you know, the place I worked at, the hospital I worked at, especially the first 15 years before I really entered IT, I worked with, you know, all nationalities, all races, all ethnicities. Very few whites. So the bosses were white, the big bosses. That was pretty much it. But down at the ground level, you know, it was the United Nations there. I got to know all cultures. I got to know a lot about people, about, you know, different things. And one thing I found out early on is how different family is to almost all immigrants, especially non-white immigrants. The rest of the world doesn't treat the elderly the way we do here in America, especially. And I think Canada and the UK is pretty much like us. You're basically the most of the white countries, unfortunately, they have a horrible, really dysfunctional attitude. I don't think they're as dysfunctional as America. I think we're number one by far. But those other cultures revere the elderly. I remember selling a house to a few houses, you know, I was selling real estate to a Korean guy that I work with. And I remember going over his house and he had, and of course it was an extended family. What you would never see in America outside of, you know, South Fork or whatever on the old show Dallas or something, outside of the very wealthy who can get away with it. The average people, you know, you don't have those extended family. He had in his big house, he had both his sons and their daughters and the grandchildren living with him. So he had a big house, which is, you know, that's attractive to me. I like that idea. And I just remember just being sitting, because of course we sat down, you know, I was his honored guest, and we were feted and treated, but all the women, the females bussied around like geisha girls. I mean, they were waiting on us hand and foot, and I thought, wow, this is, I mean, not saying we should do that here, but you know, I got to tell you, it felt pretty cool, you know, to be honored and revered. Even I was, you know, certainly nowhere near elderly. I was young then, but he was the elder statesman. He was the patriarch. He was treated with incredible honor and respect. That's the way it is in the Asian world. That's the way it is in the African world. That's the way it is in the Middle Eastern world. All those cultures revere the elderly. As you know, I said India and Iraq, both. Two-thirds of the elderly in those countries live with extended family members, which is what it ought to be. There should be no old person living alone unless they just really – my sister's that way. She wants to be alone, and she's very – you know, she's got all her faculties. She can do it. If you want to live alone, of course, you're right. But there's so many that don't. Instead, they're discarded, like they're taken out to the curb like trash and thrown in these nursing homes. It's horrible, and it's shameful, and people – but, you know, again – propaganda, brainwashing. They've got people to do it. They've got adult children thinking you can't get along. That message has been drummed in to Americans for decades. That, oh my God, the worst thing could happen. You know, you're an adult woman living, single woman living in your apartment. Oh my God, your parents going to visit. Oh, I can't get along with my mother. That theme has been repeated over and over again in comedies, especially. There's never a good relationship there. So what happens? Life imitates art. And that is the obvious to all Americans, especially as powerful as our art is. And I think that has helped create the popular, even though, you know, money usually talks, but, you know, children will still, even though they know they're frittering away their inheritance, they'll throw them in these awful facilities that you charge $4,000 to $6,000 a month for a decent one. That's, you know, how quickly your inheritance runs out doing that. And they're still going to be treated shabbily. And yet they do it. They opt to do that because the prospect of taking care of their parents or grandparents is so distasteful to them. They would rather lose, you know, a couple $100,000 or more in the process. And I've seen it play out in real life in people I know. And it is a reality. It's not all over the world. That's America. That's we're number one. That's USA, USA there. And we should be ashamed of it. We should be ashamed of a lot, but we should definitely be ashamed of that. The rest of the world doesn't treat their elderly like that yet. Now, when they come here, once they become immigrants and they're here for a generation, oh, yeah. I mean, I saw Asian children of that had been in America a while. They're right on board. First of all, they're eating fast food and gaining weight. They're losing their nice, slim Asian figures. Nope, they're overweight. And they learn very quickly to disrespect their parents. So that's part of it. But Bam says, I'm taking care of my 90-year-old mother, and I would do the same. Well, bless you, Bam. That's great. You're doing the God's work, and I wish more people would do that. And I know when I say, I mean, I know, is he still in? I guess he's out of the Bobby Doug. Is Bobby Doug? No, he got out of there. Bobby Doug Fye that was in there. That's my friend Bob Wilson, who I know that he took care of both of his parents. And it's wonderful. That's great work. But I think it's rewarding work, too. And it's great, the people that have that in them, to recognize, you know, they took care of me. Why don't I take care of them? But it's not just old people that living alone. There's so many young people that do. And, of course, that gets into the whole incel phenomenon. I mean, how many, you know, we talk about, obviously, by the very nature of the term incel, if you're involuntarily celibate, you don't have anybody with you. So odds are, other than the ones that are living in their parents' basements, the incels that make any kind of money, they're going to be living by themselves. So what's America going to look like in 30 years where the incels are, you know, aging incels? You know, it's, again, who knows what the right now, over 50% of the households. I'm going to have to look at, maybe somebody, Chris or somebody, look my article up. What was the stat in there? It was something amazing. I think it was something like 50% of the households in America are one, you know, single households. I don't want to throw an incorrect stat out there. I know Chris will be right on it. And Chris says, my grandfather's house was taken once he was admitted to an elderly rehabilitation facility. Not our decision, insurance decision. That's horrible. And that's terrible. So, I mean, I'm sorry to hear that. And, you know, again, it's there's so many bad things that can happen when you do that. But it's lonely. It's people that are forced by, you know, that used to get married, used to have children, but there's so many dynamics that are going in there. And so many people that I know personally that have this dysfunction where parents are not talking to children. They've been feuding for whatever reason, sometimes stupid reasons. They don't talk to them ever again. So they have no contact. That's just, unfathomable to me. Siblings. I know so many like they're just, no, I just can't stand my brother, my sister, whatever. And you just never talk to them again. So you don't have anybody. If you don't have kids, then you're by yourself, and it's primed to you're primed to be in the situation where, okay, maybe you're in good shape, but we can all slip and you fall, hit your head, boom, you're out of here because you didn't have anybody that was there and could say, oh, I'll come and rescue you and quickly get you help, and you'd be all right. And so I think, you know, I hope, you know, my article gives people you know, I don't live under any illusions that, you know, millions and millions of people are reading it. But I hope the people that do read it will pause and reflect that, because I thought about writing a book about it. And Chris had talked about that I should write a book about the medical industrial complex. I probably should. And but there's a book there, another book that people will never read, like Survival of the Richest, you know, my social books or Bullyocracy. That I think people can relate to, because I think there is a loneliness phenomenon, and it's very sad. We're all social creatures, and I don't think, again, there are people that would rather just want to be by themselves. I understand that, and if you do, wonderful, you should have the freedom to do that. But no one should have to be forced to live alone just because there's no one that loves them enough to live with them or let them live with them. And I just think that's tragic. And there's so many, again, I know of many people, too many people, myself, that are in that situation. And it just, you know, it just makes you want to cry, because, you know, you're your blood relatives, your family is all ultimately you have. I remember my mom would tell me that when I was young, you know, and you're trying, your brothers and sisters, the only friends you have. It's true. I mean, I have some friends I've had for a lot, lots of friends in my life. I've had lots of friends, but really the only ones that have been there the entire time have been my brother and my sisters. And so it's true. And I don't think, and most of the time when I try to get to the bottom of, like, you know, these feuds that are within families, I, you know, they're hard to figure out because when somebody says one side thing, the other says the other thing. But I think there's any way to resolve it, people should try to do it. And that's part of the loneliest phenomenon is that, I don't think that happens in other countries. I could be wrong, but I don't get the sense that, you know, in Asian cultures and things like that, that this family dysfunction exists. And I give you a perfect example. You know, there's so many Americans, especially blacks, that used to get incensed when Koreans and other Asians would come over here, start a business right away. But you know why they were able to do that? Well, first of all, a lot of them were, early on especially, were wealthier immigrants. A lot of the people I worked with in the hospital, I saw them working in the cafeteria. They've been doctors in Korea or something, but that's what they did over here. But they had money. They brought money over. So they did have a leg up to do that. But more importantly, they pulled their resources together. And those families, those Asian families and Middle Eastern families, because they didn't have the American dysfunction, they'd start a business together. Most Americans, you'd be lucky if you didn't. It would be at least one murder, guaranteed, if most American families, like brothers and sisters or whatever, got together and started a business. You know there's going to be at least one murder. You're going to watch it on America's Most Wanted or whatever. You know it's going to be. But that's America. And it's, you know, we can laugh at it, but it's really tragic because it should not be that way. And for them to say, well, how did they do it? It's not really a mystery. They pulled their resources together because they're willing to work together for the common goal. Most Americans are not. And I think that's another reason why we have the loneliness phenomenon, because the American dysfunction is so great. And I don't, you know, a lot of it comes from the media because this kind of gets promoted all the time. And how many movies have you seen about where people get together for Thanksgiving and it's the only time they see, I mean, I don't know how many times that's been done in Hollywood, or Christmas, but it's first time they see their relatives and, you know, oh God, they're agonizing over whatever feuds are going on. And, oh God, I got to see Uncle Billy again. And it's a theme that is played out over and over again. And again, life imitates art. Life imitates art. Sorry. So again, the messages that are being sent out, I think, help. But so whatever it is, read that if you can, the American Loneliness Phenomenon, DonaldJeffries.wordpress.com. I think you'll get something out of it. And you can read my other work there, also in Substack. We'll be right back in these words.
Out of the airplane, step Chamberlain with a condemned stare.
And welcome back to Your Protest. I want to shout out to the chat room. Of course, the chat room's been pretty full tonight, but now it's petering out right as I go to thank everybody. So Billy Ray, I see, just left. Thanks, Billy Ray, for being here. You know how much I appreciate you. Tony Arterburn was in there earlier. Wise Wolf Radio, thanks for being here as well. So we got Sophia the Bot, Bam, the artist formerly known as Bam, now Bam 420. Onslow, recognize that. Gentle Wolverine. Jacob B., my buddy from Facebook, Chris Graves, the man, most remarkable researcher out there. He's just been an incredible help to me. I really appreciate him. Sea Stars Yet, good to see you here. Talkative Specimen and Fancy Guest and everybody else that's been in and out, because, again, it was a lot of people flowing through. Like to get some calls. I don't even know if the phone lines are working. Like I said, every week now I'm getting – people telling me they tried to call. So, you know, just one more glitch here, I guess, but it's 1-833. What is it? 1-833-TFR-LIVE. So please, if you can call, try to call. We'd love to hear from you. So, so that's enough, I guess, about the loneliness issue, but, politically speaking, I'm getting a bit of hope, a little hopium, if you will, from what we're seeing in the school boards. I don't know if you saw the most incredible one that somebody sent me this week was this guy, Josh something or other. I don't know, but he was in somewhere in Pennsylvania, I think. And this guy, I mean, it was almost like it was hard to believe it was real. This guy was like a tyrant from Captain Queeg or something from the Caine Mutiny. I mean, this guy was absurd. He was so over the top. And they had like three or four parents that were up there and talking about critical race theory. First of all, he shouted them down as soon as they started. He wouldn't let them say critical race theory. And what was amazing is that, you know, they had the balls to get up there, but they really didn't fight back like I thought they should have. They should have been screaming back at him and saying, how dare you? Because what did he do? He kept saying, you're done. You're done. He kept saying, and it's like, what? What are you talking about? I mean, it's like I pictured Rahm Emanuel, you know, the story about him, you know, with a knife at the restaurant and bang, you're dead. You're dead. They're dead. You know, banging it into the names of Democratic lobbyist or whatever it was. But, you know, it's so over the top that it's hard to believe that's real, that kind of tyranny. But that's what we're faced with. That's the prospect. And that's at that level. That's at the school board level. You see it in some of these mayors. You see it in the police chiefs and you know, the local officials that are so full of this tyranny. So you know how bad it is when it's that at that level. But at least the parents are there. You know, there's enough of them that they're causing a ruckus, and I hope they don't back down. Now, what should have happened? I wish the people in the audience there, when he was saying you're done, they should have gotten up and screamed in unison. And ideally, they should have ran up and just thrown that guy out and ejected him from, you know, who the hell do you think you are? You're a public official. You're talking to us like that. We pay your salaries. You serve us. We do not serve you. But they didn't do that. And that's the problem we face. And, you know, from someone who spent too many years talking up in meetings and always being the first one to talk up. And when, you know, the workers had a bunch of us had, you know, a concern, I would be the one that would be the spokesman always, because I was, you know, I was willing to do it. And there, you know, you have to have somebody that's willing to speak up. But then when you do speak up, if you get left on a limb, as I was every time I spoke up, all the people that said they would back me up, crickets, nothing. And what happens is then you become, you know, ostracized. It's easier for them to target you. The bosses target you. Well, that's what happens here. If one person speaks up, one person has the courage to speak up, that audience who presumably, again, and if they don't have the same concerns about the crap that's being taught their youngsters, then again, that's the problem, isn't it? Is that they're that stupid and they're that submissive and they're that malleable. And they're that willing to endure the kind of tyranny. But if they don't speak up, then the person, then he can say, you're done, and the police will come back. But if you have 8, 10, 12 people standing up at once and shouting in unison, saying, how dare you, they can't really sick the police on everybody. It's a game of numbers. It's always a game of numbers. And if you just get enough people, whether it's millions of people marching into Washington, D.C., or in any of those situations, people supporting, just give support to the one, because it takes a great deal of courage to be that one. Believe me, I've been there many times before. It isn't easy. And not everybody can do it, but some of us can. And if you have people that are willing to speak up, support them. Don't sit there on your hands. And, you know, it happened to me many times and I lost lots of friends over it because I realized, wow, these people are not my friends and they're the problem. The reason that this is happening is because those people continue to remain silent. What is it? You know, silence makes cowards of us all. So you can't be silent in the face of tyranny. You have to speak up. And again, you don't have to be the first one because there's plenty of Don Jeffries out there. There are enough of us that will be the first one to speak up. Just back us up. Show support. Be there, because their power in numbers. They can't take on that many people, but they can easily get rid of the people that speak up if no one backs them up. So let's hope that more and more people start backing up these parents and the parents don't back down, because so far they're doing a pretty good job. C. Gray says, when the media either blacks it out or only claimed 15 protesters showed up. Well, that's true, yeah. And they will do that. But if if the parents make it done for, and you know, if you, if they start with taking their kid, because that's what I'd be. I mean, I would, you would see me on those videos right now if my kids were still in school. I would be going nuts about some of the, especially the critical race theory. You know, you're, and I think, I hope, maybe they finally pushed a lot of these parents too far, because it's one thing to say all white people are horrible and white privilege this, white supremacy that, you know, and talking about, you know, people when, you know, the bottom 50% of American, which includes a lot of white people, are making less than $27,000 a year and have less than 1% of the collective wealth. 70-some percent of America lives paycheck to paycheck. Not very much privilege going on out there. But I hope that maybe they push them far enough to where they're not going to stand it. And if enough of them speak up again, they, the media can black it out. But those school boards, and if they can, especially if they can, they've already had a few recall efforts. If they can start recalling school board, but they have to be able to do that. If they can start doing it. And again, I'm sure the establishment recognizes what's going on. Okay, this is an attack at the bottom. And they will rally. They'll use the media, definitely. And the media is always – but again, the media is only effective because the stupid people, the same people that I'm seeing in my family and elsewhere that are falling for the nonsense with the plandemic and everything else, if you keep falling for it, if you don't fall for it, then it doesn't matter what the media says. If you, I mean, does it matter to us? We laugh at it, right? So – we have to wake these people up, and hopefully that the parents have enough of an incentive, their own flesh and blood, their own little kids, that the ones that have gotten fired up because, you know, they don't want their 5- and 6-year-old kids being told there's something wrong with them because they're white and that they have something, you know, some kind of great crime hanging over them and that they have to feel guilty about something. And they're very, you know, obviously they're very justified to feel upset about this because it's child abuse to do that. So hopefully something will happen there. But at any rate, that's the only hope I've seen, the only sliver, you know, of a silver lining that I've seen in a long time. So I'm trying to stress it because I realize when I talk to people that people, you know, it's it may be like if somebody's suicidal, they're going to listen to me and Joe jump off the roof. And I don't want that to happen. Where there's life, there's hope. I never want to get, you know, to try to discourage people, to demoralize people. But the problem is that the situation is that bad, and you can't sugarcoat it. I mean, we've lost on all fronts. I mean, if you don't know by now after the election fiasco that the courts are closed to us, and you should have known it before, but certainly people should know by now, the court systems are completely closed. There is no justice there. The media is completely controlled. There's no justice there. The culture has been largely bought and sold, and so they're pushing a completely different reality on people. The last thing that the last group that has any kind of power in the United States are white supremacists, whatever the hell they are, wherever they exist. Because really, the only white supremacists that you might argue exist are however many dwindling number of KKK members there are. Which, you know, just has zero power at all. I mean, zero power. And to act like this is the problem, for Joe Biden and people to say that white supremacists are the greatest problem, for the person in charge of the military to say they're trying to weed them out, this is not only an inverse of reality like we've never seen before. It's Twilight Zone on steroids. But it has to be confronted. And it's not being confronted enough, unfortunately. Bam says, Citizens United. Yeah, there you go. More, you know, because until, and we have to, we can't confront it halfway. You can't do it the stupid party, the Republican way, which is to not talk about the giant elephant in the room. What's the giant elephant in the room is the way they've used black people and black power. This is everything is in this culture is being driven through blacks, where basically they have made it to where every, that no blacks can be criticized for anything, and they instill that in every, and they cannot be wrong. They're not being treated like the rest of us, obviously. And no matter what it is, there has to be white responsibility and white guilt, a white to be blamed at the center of everything. So if you have blacks attacking and assaulting and physically assaulting Asians, that doesn't fit the script, and it's ignored, and in fact – it's just converted into somehow some kind of condemnation of white supremacy, even though there were no white involved there at all. But it has to be confronted, and most white people are scared to mention race. So you have the Republican cucks that keep talking about, well, you know, Trump got more Hispanic and Black voters, and of course you say African American too, which you're already defeating it when you're using their terminology, which Black people don't use, by the way. Blacks don't call themselves African Americans. Again, I've worked and socialized with many of them. They laugh at this stuff. This is all absurd, white woke nonsense, and it has to be confronted. So every time you hear some absurd white talk about white this, white that, and how whites are bad, you got to confront them. And you got to say, you do recognize you're white, right? So do you mean all whites except you? How about kids? Do you have white kids? So do you mean all whites except you and your kids? How about your parents? You have to confront them. You can't act as if they're, you know, that's unfortunately what people do. They don't confront. And certainly the media is never going to confront them, and our politicians never. But we have to start, you know, doing what we can in our own little world. And that's what has made me so popular in my own circle of family and friends, because I have been willing to confront that for a long time. And you have to be, because you can't partially address these issues. There's a racial component there. It has to be. Just like you can't talk about our foreign policy without talking about Jewish influence in the United States. You can't. You can't do it without talking about Israel at the center of it. So you can't halfway address these things. You have to recognize the elephants in the room. You don't get obsessed about it. So you don't talk, so that people can just say, oh, you hate Jews, you hate Blacks. And that's not the case at all. Like I've said many times, when I'm talking about Blacks, I have no problems with Blacks at all. None of this is their responsibility, because it's all being enabled, and it's all being they're being directed and manipulated to do these things, and they're just simply not being held responsible for the behavior that results from it. And if you don't hold everyone responsible in the same manner, then the laws mean nothing. The rules mean nothing, and the standards of conduct mean nothing if they're not applied equally to everyone. They're not applied equally to everyone. Anybody that thinks Black people today are held to the same standards of conduct and rules and laws hasn't worked in a workplace and hasn't seen some of the things that Black workers get away with, usually from their absurd, you know, cucked white bosses. I saw it, and again, I saw it when I was – this was happening when I entered the workforce in the mid-70s. I never saw any white boss, not one, ever hold a Black that was really, you know, decided to just do what he wanted to do. I never saw them hold Black people – this was in the mid-70s – accountable as they would if any white employee had done the exact same thing, and that's been the problem. That has gone on for decades. While the inverse reality even then was that, oh, yeah, he's going after me because I'm Black, when in reality he was avoiding going after you because you were Black, and he wasn't holding you accountable for doing something that he would have fired a white employee for doing. So we have to recognize that. And again, it's not because we're going after Blacks, because Blacks are doing nothing more. You know, if they gave me a card like that, if they gave me a get-out-of-jail-free Monopoly card – so when I knew that if I got my hand caught in the cookie jar, if I did something, all I had to do is say this word, racist. I can't say that I wouldn't use it, and I think most of us would. I don't blame them at all. I blame the people that enable them to do it, and we have to address it, because it's not the biggest problem there at all. Obviously, because Blacks don't run things, but they are for the most part. But they are being used. And again, as Bam says right here, divide and conquer. It's part of the divide and conquer strategy. It's to get people looking that way. And it is, you know, it's very hard to avoid not becoming hateful when you see some of the things, some of the violent things that Black people are doing, the knockout game and things like that. I really, you know, have to hold myself back from really becoming hateful about it, because it's the fact that it happens, and then it's covered up. It would be just a horrible, violent incident that would be addressed logically, taken care of legally, and it would be known for what it is. The knockout game, for instance, I talked about in Bullyocracy, and I gave many examples of headlines and news stories from the paper that word for word tried to minimize it, tried to downplay it. The knockout, why the knockout game's not really a thing. It's a thing. It's still a thing. And you've seen it with, you know, Asians doing it. But this is a reprehensible thing. It should be. And again, a culture, that culture that's been created, largely was created starting with our man FDR back in the 30s when blacks began being herded into northern cities to become effective voting blocks for Democrats. Their so-called culture, again, has been enabled by whites who want it to be that way. They want this. They love this culture of stupidity because, again, it ensures that the blacks will not fully integrate into society and they will continue this kind of separate and clinging to this culture that celebrates violence and stupidity and anti-learning and, you know, reading is, you know, when you read a book that's white. That kind of thing. That's what that culture is. Fathers abandoning their children. It's horrific, and it should be called out. But there's not one white man other than me with my little platform I have that's going to call them out. The only time it ever gets called out is a few blacks that will call it out. But no whites have the guts to do it, and you have to. If you don't do it, then again you ensure. And again, I take that back. Not that you have to call it out, but you have to stop celebrating it. And we've allowed, and Jacob, I think, he's saying whites, and we know who he's talking about. But when we celebrate it, when you have the Spike Lees of the world be getting, you know, recognition for, you know, vicious anti-white films and just celebrating the hood and glamorizing this thing. It's, you know, it's like what happened in the gangsters and the mafia became so popular in the United States because Hollywood built them up with James Cagney and Edward G. Robinson. They glorified those mobsters. They showed, hey, you know, you can get the hottest chicks. And again, life imitates art. And what happened? Those mobsters did get a lot of the hottest chicks. They began, hey, you know, this kind of works. And so that was the beginning of it. And there's no, I tell you, again, I worked with hundreds of blacks over the years. And again, they admire that gangster lifestyle. This is what a lot of that, basically the gangs in the black culture was built on. I met very few blacks guys working with him, socializing with him, whose favorite movie wasn't Scarface. They loved that movie because, again, it depicted things maybe the way they wanted, this kind of this brute violence. And, you know, you get the women by acting this way and you're a tough guy. But the art is what builds it up. The culture builds it up. And we're still doing it where we glorify. Jacob says the gangsters in New York City actually made money and kept the neighborhood safe generally. Yeah, that's true. There was an upside. Bam talks about the Sopranos. Yeah, the Sopranos were glorified. But, well, again, they put out a show where Tony Soprano was – he talked about his family life. He kills people for a living. I mean, there's something wrong there. You're crossing a line, a moral compass. And this is why America's so messed up because we send those signals out. You can't. But what was the what was the serial killer? I never watched it on Showtime. The serial killer that killed other serial killers. I've forgotten his name. I'm sure somebody will tell me in the chat room. But again, that's crossing a moral line. You know, it's just, you know, you can't. How are you going to make a sympathetic character out of a hitman for the mob or a serial killer? Dexter. Thank you, Chris. Yes, I knew he would know. So, you know, you're crossing lines there. So this black culture, is anti-culture. It's not really, it's coming back this year. Oh, that's great. Well, how are you going to hold it back? But, you know, so when you glorify something and you glamorize it and you make it, again, instead of it should be denigrated, if you had real comedy shows, unlike Saturday Night Live, black culture would be ridiculed. Black leaders like Maxine Waters would be comic fodder beyond anything Trump ever dreamed of. They would be diced and sliced up to pieces. They would be shamed into hiding. And if you did it the right way, because that's how you defang something. You show how bad it is. satire can work wonders. Now, of course, you know, American society is pretty much walking satire. It's self-satire, but you can still show how stupid some of this stuff is, but they don't. Instead, they respect it. They glorify it. So, you know, when you have, instead of making black kids do what all other kids are asked to do, you know, learn basic math, learn basic grammar. Now, well, you know, you call their pidgin English, which is just improper English. You call it Ebonics. You know, you give it the respect it doesn't deserve. It's absurd. And what do you, I mean, you think England would give the Cockney, you know, the Cockney accent, the respect and call it some, you know, Cockneyism or something and give it, put it on equal footing with English? Of course not. It's absurd. The Chinese, they forget about it if they had anything like that. You can't do that. You can't say that it's racist to learn basic math and but this is what's happening now. You can't have a civilization like that, and we have to face it. Jacob says I'm bitching about blacks, but I'm really bitching about the system because again, it's not their fault, but it's ridiculous to watch it. You see what happened at ESPN, you know, which I stopped watching a long time ago. Rachel Nichols, who is a typical white virtue signaler, who clearly, you know, is part of this process, but she made the mistake of bitching to someone about diversity, about some, you know, typical affirmative action project, I don't even know what her name is, that was competing with her on air. And what happened? She got in trouble because they recorded her conversation, which should be an invasion of privacy. And just like that NBA owner a few years back. And she was taken off. I think she's been kicked somewhere else, but she lost the big gig. And the black woman she was complaining about naturally was promoted. And this has happened over and over again. And ESPN exemplifies all this wrong because they're part of the white supremacy system run by whites that does everything they can to denigrate whites. And they don't care how many millions of viewers they've lost because they're everything about – this is supposed to be about sports. All they do is talk political issues. And it's very troubling. And it has to be addressed. You can't do it halfway. So when you talk about – some things, it's not enough to say we're going to get blacks and Hispanics voting our way. No, we have to say blacks, Hispanics, whites, everyone else, this is the rules. This is the rule. This is the law. This is the standards of conduct. This is the expectation. You can't make exception for people. And that's what we've been doing. And rules have to apply across the board or they're meaningless and no one should respect them. Bam says the system is rigged, and if something isn't done soon, we're done. Absolutely, it's true. I mean, we probably already are done. Like I said, the only hope I see out there are those school board, and I don't know, you know, there's going to be enough there, but I'm still trying to hold out that hope, because starting from as Dave Frank was talking about, you know, starting from the bottom up is really the only way to do it. So maybe we can go low enough. Maybe we can start a dog catcher or something and cascade upwards and try to get some honest people. Because I used to say disparity of wealth is the greatest problem in this country. And it's still obviously a hugely significant problem. But I think the biggest problem is the corruption. The corruption at all levels. It is complete and systematic. It's everywhere. And it's to find an honest man or a woman is very hard now. They're so outnumbered. It has to be addressed. And Tucker Carlson has talked about this. You know, you can't have a society that's this corrupt. We cannot have a working society with this much corruption. You just, especially when you're going to pretend that you're a free country and you're a first world nation. You can't do it. We have to do something about the corruption. But we're just about out of time. So keep sending forth those tiny ripples of hope. Listen to the Donald Jeffrey Show. Please come over to Ocelli.com. Join the chat room. Call in Wednesdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And as always, thank you so much for listening to I Protest.